Chapter 3. At Water Level. I took an apartment in Canareggio, a residential quarter sufficiently removed from the main tourist thoroughfare that it still retained its old neighborhood atmosphere. Housewives shopping at the open-air food market, children playing in the squares, the Venetian dialect making a lilting sing-song of the spoken word. Footsteps and voices were, in fact, the dominant sounds in Venice, since there were no cars to drown them out, and very little vegetation to absorb them. Voices carried with startling clarity through the stone-paved squares and alleys. A few fleeting words spoken in the house across the calle sounded surprisingly close, as if they had been uttered by someone in the same room. In the early evenings, people gathered in clusters to gossip in Strada Nuova, the main street of Canareggio, and the sound of their mingled conversations rose in the air like the buzz of a cocktail party in a large room. My apartment occupied part of the ground floor of Palazzo da Silva, which had been the British embassy in the 17th century. It was just outside the ghetto, the 500-year-old Jewish quarter, which, as the world's first ghetto, gave its name to all future ghettos. My new home had three rooms with marble floors, beamed ceilings, and a view of the Misericordia Canal, which flowed along the side of the building like a moat, lapping at the stones 10 feet below my window. On the far side of the canal, the foot traffic along the walk in front of a row of small shops was as peaceful as that of a country lane. The canal itself was a narrow, lightly traveled backwater. Boats passed just often enough to keep the water churning and splashing appealingly. At high tide, traffic was visible above the windowsill, and the boatmen's voices rang clear and close at hand. As the tide lowered, the men and their boats slipped out of sight, like window washers on a descending scaffold. Their voices receded and acquired an echo as the canal became a deepening trench. Then the tide came in again and lifted the men and boats back into view. My landlords, Peter and Rose Lauritsen, lived 2 floors above, on the main floor of the palace, the Piano Nobile. Peter was American, Rose was English. They had lived in Venice for nearly 30 years. I called them at the suggestion of friends, who said they were agreeable people, extraordinarily knowledgeable about Venice, and might have a small guest apartment available in their building. Peter Lauritsen had written 4 well-regarded books about Venice, concerning its history, its art, its architecture, and efforts at preservation. His History of Venice, published in 1978, was one of the few to have been written in English since the first by Horatio Brown in 1893. Once his books had established him as a cultural historian, Peter began to make his living as a lecturer for upper echelon tours of Italy and Eastern Europe. His roster of blue ribbon clients included museum trustees, groups of academic specialists, and wealthy individuals in search of an expert guide. Peter was a man of somewhat formal demeanor, I was told, but dynamic. It was Rose who had answered the telephone when I called about the apartment months before. She spoke in a swooping, full-throated English drawl that subsided every so often into an incomprehensible mumble, before regaining clarity and taking flight again. This remarkable voice materialized upon my arrival in the form of a strikingly beautiful woman in her late 40s, with large, wide-set, smoky blue eyes, a broad smile, and a billowing mane of shoulder-length brown hair. She was tall, dressed in black, and precariously thin, but fashionably so. As she showed me around the apartment, I discovered she had a wacky charm that expressed itself in emphatic, slightly absurd, often self-mocking remarks. "In Venice," she said, "no matter what you say, everyone will assume you're lying. Venetians always embellish, and they take it for granted you will too, so you might as well, because funnily enough, if they discover you're someone who tells the truth all the time, they'll simply write you off as a bore."